The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Hope your start of your weekend is going great. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, hanging out with you till 7 p.m. at least this evening as we've been breaking down all things black and gold. Saints training camp in full force now. The padded practices began on Monday. They had two other sessions. The one on yesterday's was the indoor facility, not open to fans, was definitely the most spirited practice. And I think being inside has a lot to do with it too, Jeff.
No doubt. Yeah. And it's funny because there's been so much video. If you've noticed, if you follow on social media, like there's been so much more video of the practices this year than there has been basically in decades. And the reason is Kellen Moore is not concerned about the video getting out there, at least not this year. Maybe he gets annoyed and changes his tune.
Don't say anything.
But that's been a major difference, and that's why you're seeing so much of this camp circulating in terms of a video, is because they don't, you know, when they're outside and the fans are there, they don't shut down the recording. And so you'll see a lot of these plays on social media, and, you know, some of them have been good, some of them bad.
And as you know, unfortunately, those bad videos get turned into a little snowball into a huge one. And the negativity around quarterback Tyler Shuck just seems to be growing at a rapid pace. And I get it from certain aspect, but we still have a lot of camp to go. I know you don't want to hear that, but to be so down on this rookie who's going through a learning process in camp, I think it's really still too young to make any kind of definitive assessment on Shuck's abilities to play quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, and we can talk more about what they actually did, but I think the reason for that is because people came in with unrealistic expectations of what the number 40 overall pick was supposed to look like in his first week of practice at the NFL level.
Well, and you kept hearing, too, the older prospect is NFL ready.
Well, I mean, that's the idea.
Not exactly.
You bring
NFL
in a guy who's,
right away,
who's older and he's going to be more mature,
sure,
and ready to handle the rigors of the NFL. It doesn't mean he's ready to step in on day one of practice and suddenly be a star. And he's a little further behind than I would like to see. But we've talked extensively about this, and I have been firm from the jump that it made the most sense to start Spencer Rattler however long that went. You know, and I kept pointing to week 12 as the most likely or more reasonable
changing point.
Yeah, kind of jump off if it got to that point, because it's coming out of a bye at home against the Falcons, and then you would have a five-game stretch to end, or a 6-7, whatever, I don't math, a decent stretch of games to end the season where you can kind of get a picture of where he is going into the next year, right? Like, that's, it was always the most sensible path. But everyone gets excited, they get hyped up, and, you know, and suddenly now you're seeing people kind of change their opinions.
We should have drafted Shador.
Right, and for me, it's like, I'm right where I was 2 months ago. The benefit of being right is I don't have to explain why I was wrong, right? And that's why I'm not overreacting, because this is exactly what I expected. Rookies struggle early in their careers. It takes time. Like, Spencer Rattler last year didn't have to deal with this level of scrutiny. Jake Haener 2 years ago didn't have to deal with this level of scrutiny, because you had a starter. And I think that's why the Saints were perfectly fine going into this season with Derek Carr, even though a lot of people are like, why are they doing that? And Derek, you know, it didn't work out. But, like, I think we would not be talking about Tyler the way we're talking about Tyler if Derek was here as the starter, because we would be talking about Tyler the way we were talking about Spencer last year and only looking at the positives,
right,
and saying,
a rookie finding his way.
Right. And instead, because it's a competition, every rookie struggle, everything we would look at and say, okay, that's a developmental point,
it's just that magnified.
It's a loss.
Yeah.
It turns rookie development moments into losses because it's a competition, and that's why it's getting portrayed the way it is. When in reality, you have, what, 8 practices in your NFL career, and people are trying to label stuff, and you just have not seen enough. You know, and like, there was a big deal made about the 2-minute drill yesterday, and yes, it was ugly, but there's also a factor of, you know, there were some ugly snaps. I don't think it's a coincidence the Saints are bringing in Shane Lemieux, who, you know, kind of worked into being their backup center last year, because those second team snaps, I love me some Will Clapp, they were rough, right? And so you had one that was on the ground, ended up being a fumble, you had 2 sacks. So, you know, yeah, when you can't get off the ground, it's going to look difficult. You know, one thing I appreciated from Tyler yesterday is you saw aggressive throws. And that's been one of my biggest criticisms to this point in camp of Tyler has been he doesn't seem willing to test limits and put the ball maybe in harm's way, but give guys chances. You know, when I have Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed in one-on-one, that's advantage offense. And I should be trying to give them a chance to go win a ball. I should not be throwing it out of bounds, trying to be too safe with the ball. I should be giving them chances, and we saw that yesterday. Chris Olave was going downfield. He was kind of isolated on Terrell Burgess, and Tyler just put it up to him. Terrell held him. Penalty, you know, productive play for the offense. Like, yes, it's coverage, but that's your star receiver. You go give him a chance. You know, he did throw two interceptions.
I was going to say, on the flip side, that one INT was particularly ugly, and he looked like he kind of even, you know, rolled his ankle a little.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything too serious, though.
I did ask Kellen about that after the practice, and he did finish out the day.
Right.
He did the work, so it doesn't seem like that's going to be anything that lingers. But, yeah, I mean, the first interception, I think it was, again, a low snap. He got the ball out late, and, you know, it was kind of a tip drill situation. I don't think it was necessarily a bad decision. The ball kind of hit Cedric Wilson in the chest. I think it was Rico Payton got his hand in, knocked it up. Nephi Sewell intercepted it. That's fine. Like, you look at that and you say, okay, what went wrong? Let's fix it. The second one was kind of up the seam to Cedric Wilson. And, you know, one thing that Tyler does is throws off his back foot a little too often.
Right.
In situations,
just looked ugly when it happened.
Yeah, in situations I don't think he needs to. Like, sometimes you need to make that throw. This was not a case. Like, I felt like he just kind of relied on it, and I think he kind of blew a tire. And that's why the ball had nothing on it. Jordan Howden made a nice play on the ball. But, yeah, I mean, like, we're going to be talking about Tyler, and the correct way to talk about Tyler at this point is, okay, what did he struggle with his first week of practice? What does he need to work on? Where do we want to see him in his second week of practice, in his third week of practice? What does he need to do better so that by the time the regular season comes around, we can have a conversation about where he is relative to being ready to start in the NFL?
You brought up he threw two interceptions yesterday, his first two picks of camp. Hopefully that maybe loosens him up a little bit so he doesn't have that in the back of his head going forward.
Yeah, I think so.
And two big padded practices tomorrow and Sunday, back-to-back. It'll be interesting to see how he responds after that day yesterday.
No doubt.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll dip back into our WWL Sound Bank. That's brought to you by First American Bank. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This defense is kind of like, well, if not the same type of defense I played in at Bama. So it's very comfortable for me. The plays, everything that we're doing, the techniques, everything's kind of the same that I learned for 3 years up under Coach Saban. So, yeah, and I trust Coach Staley and Coach GB at the highest level.
You just heard from Saints corner Kool-Aid McKinstry in the WWL Sound Bank, brought to you by First American Bank. And that's been one of the big positives I feel so far this training camp is going into year two. The corner is looking like he's adjusting well to the new scheme being brought in, new staff going on here, and you're expecting a new role for him this year as a starter on this Saints secondary. So a lot of big things expected from Kool-Aid McKinstry, and it's nice to hear praise from your head coach as well. I'm sure he liked that as well.
No doubt. And he's mentioned it. GB is Grady Brown. He's the cornerback's coach, new coach this year, obviously.
Yeah, GB.
Everyone knows GB. Yeah, and Terry Joseph is the defensive pass game coordinator. He's more working with the safeties. So, you know, it's a whole thing. But now, if I had to pick an MVP from the first 8 days of camp, probably be Kool-Aid, at least on the defensive side. If we're adding in offensive players, Rashid Shaheed's probably up there.
Mm-hmm.
But Kool-Aid has looked very confident and
vocal too,
and vocal, yeah, and excited. He wears a grill at practice now, so when he breaks up a pass, he just stands there smiling at people, you know. But no, he just looks like a kid who came in in shape, right? He said he lost like 12 pounds over the offseason. He felt like he just wasn't playing at the weight he wanted to when he got back to the weight he played at in his sophomore season at Alabama, which is when he had his best season in college. So he feels comfortable playing at this weight. When you lose weight as a defensive player, okay, can you be physical? And he says he feels confident he can play physical. We've seen him play physical even in these non-tackling practices. He's been getting after it. So, no, I mean, like, that was a big question for me. Because if Kool-Aid came in and just did not look like he had it, then the outside cornerback position was
a huge concern. Right.
Now it's like, okay, I feel good about that spot. I think he's going to handle it well, and I think this off defense is going to suit him. And the question's going to become, who's taking that spot on the other side? Because, you know, you got Ike Adam, who I don't know. Like, I like him as a backup. I'm not sure I like him as the starter. And then Quincy Riley, who I think you got some ball hawk in there, but you know, it's not consistent. Like it's nice to have a guy who can pick the ball off, but like, I don't want a guy who's going to lose half his reps but intercept the ball on every third loss. Like, so I don't know. Like, it's tough. Like, I don't know if Quincy's ready to be the starter. So it's just, you got to figure something out. I really wouldn't be surprised at all if you get through camp, you get halfway through camp, and suddenly you see another face in that room.
Kool-Aid talked about also year two making a huge difference in his game.
Since high school, I always kind of had that year one and year two leap, so it's kind of falling right apart now. So I feel like, I said, it's up to God. It's a blessing. And, you know, I always try to keep my head down and work. So I feel like this offseason I put in a lot of work. I got my body in shape. I lost a lot of weight. I feel like I'm where I need to be.
What was the thought process behind that? Something you felt like you needed to do after playing last year?
I felt like I was a lot heavy last year, coming off the foot surgery, coming out of the combine. So I kind of lost like at least 12 pounds since the last game against Tampa Bay to now. So I feel like it got me playing better. I feel like I'm better in shape. Spent this offseason a lot hooping. That's my love right there, playing basketball. So I was able to get in shape a lot by hooping, because we all know basketball shape is different than football shape, and I feel like it got me to where I need to be now.
I'll get ready for, you know, come the regular season, Jeff, when it's time to get in the locker room. Those hooping sessions in the Saints locker room, you're going to see plenty of Kool-Aid McKinstry going against whoever in there.
I don't know. He said he's a playmaker, so he's more of a passer. I think that's what that means. But, yeah, no, like, we've seen, you know, you want to see that year two leap, right? Like, we always talk about it. It's easier said than done, but I think that is what you're getting from Kool-Aid right now.
Lost a significant amount of weight, too.
Yeah, 12 pounds. That's not, I mean, he's going to be playing around 190, I think, is the plan for him, which is a good size for a cornerback. He's not like he dropped down to like 170 or anything, but I think it takes a little while at the NFL level to figure out the weight you want to play at. So yeah, that's not unusual for guys to really kind of reshape their body after a year or two.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll get into a little LSU football talk. Glenn West from Go247 Sports joins us right after this. Stay tuned on WWL.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Been talking a ton about Saints football. Now we're going to get into a little LSU conversation. Joining us now, Glenn West, the senior writer at Go247.com, joining us. Glenn, how's it going, man? How's the Baton Rouge practices treating you over there?
I'm sure around the same temperature as the Saints are treating y'all. So, it's been great. Got two practices in. Got another full practice viewing tomorrow for media. So we're in our infancy stages of fall camp, but it's been a lot to digest so far.
Yeah, before we get into some of that, I know today three-star defensive lineman Darius McKinley committed to the LSU Tigers, joining his brother in purple and gold. Talk a little about the defensive lineman now that's coming into this class for the Tigers.
Yeah, this is a prospect that LSU's been on for several years now. He got a chance to watch his big brother Dominic McKinley go through the whole process, and he's been around LSU's campus a ton over the last couple of years. Really solid athlete, a guy who started out as a four-star on most services, has kind of dipped a little bit in the rankings over the last several months or so, but a guy who had a lot of Power Four offers from teams like Texas and Ole Miss and lots of Power Four, SEC type of teams. So it's a talented guy. It's somebody that mixes in well with the defensive line group that they've already brought in. And honestly, this is one of the better defensive line classes that LSU's had if they're able to hold on to all these guys since I've been covering the team. I mean, you've got five stars, Lamar Brown and Trenton Henderson, who are committed. You've got Richard Anderson, who's committed, who's a top 70 player in the country. DeAnthony Lafayette is a young prospect who is really kind of rising up the rankings here in the year 2025. So they've done a really nice job of building out this defensive line class, and might not be done. There's a guy by the name of Deuce Gerald who'll be committing tomorrow, and LSU's very much in the mix there as well.
You know, Glenn, I'm just going to keep it vague here. What has stood out to you? Like, is there any kind of prevailing observations over the first few days of practice? Obviously, there's not a ton you can take away this early, but what's kind of stood out to you so far?
Sure. I think probably the depth at wide receiver and along the defensive line have been kind of the things that stood out to me in that first practice. How it was set up, we got to watch the whole first practice for LSU, and then the next day we got to watch about 15 minutes. So altogether, we've probably seen about an hour and 15 minutes of LSU football this fall so far. So you don't want to make any sweeping judgments, but the wide receiver group was really, really good in the first day, and they've just got so many guys that they can go to in this offense. Nussmeier was really spreading the ball around to guys like Berrien Brown, Xavier Thomas, Chris Hilton, and then a guy who had a really big day that maybe wasn't talked about a whole ton this offseason was Destin Hill, the Florida State transfer. You know, everybody talked about Berrien Brown and Nick Anderson as the kind of the two big gets for them at wide receiver, but Destin Hill had a really good first day from the 7-on-7 and certainly in the 11-on-11 periods as well. So I just think there's an embarrassment of riches there from a pass-catching perspective, and we got to see that on full display. And then the defensive line did a really nice job of slowing the run game down for LSU's offense in that first day as well. So some good starts there on both sides of the ball, but we'll be excited to see kind of what happens tomorrow when we get a full two-hour practice to watch these guys go at it.
You know, what are your expectations for Chris Hilton this year? And obviously, fifth-year senior, dealt with injuries last year. He's healthy now. We did hear from him at the SEC Media Days. But is he a guy that you feel like could kind of step in? Because it feels like there's always one of the LSU always has, when they're good, like that elite receiver at the top that's in the conversation for the awards at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, I think Chris Hilton is, the big thing with him has always been health, and he's been healthy this offseason. This is really his first offseason that I can recall that he's been able to kind of go full speed and really develop the rest of his game. Everybody knows about the speed and the vertical threat that he offers LSU, but the thing he talked a lot about at SEC Media Days was just being able to be more versatile in his role within the offense, being a short down kind of catch kind of guy, a guy who can be more of a possession receiver this year because of his improved route running. Just watching those two go back and forth between Nussmeier and Hilton, I'm not sure that there is a more natural chemistry that Nussmeier has with another receiver than with Hilton. We just haven't been able to see it on the field for a prolonged amount of time. We got the final two games against Oklahoma and Baylor where they really started to show their flashes there, but I think that if Hilton stays healthy, Nussmeier is going to have a favorite target or two, and Hilton is going to be right at the top of my list for a guy who will get a lot of those targets from Garrett Nussmeier in the fall.
Glenn, definitely my biggest concern, and probably a lot of folks, is the offensive line replacing, four guys, only returning starters, DJ Chester from last season. Just curious your observations or thoughts on this O-line so far. I know it's really been early on for you.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they've wasted no time going to the offensive line grouping that I think ideally you'd love to see them lean into when that Clemson game arrives. You've got Tyree Adams at left tackle. You've got DJ Chester at left guard. The transfer Braylon Moore at center. The other transfer Josh Thompson at right guard. And then Weston Davis at right tackle. That's kind of a mix of guys who have been in the program but haven't had that experience yet with you know, in Braylon Moore and Josh Thompson's case, two veterans who have a ton of experience. I think that's the grouping that LSU would love to see kind of take off. I would say of the the snaps that we saw with the first team, that offensive line grouping got about 90% of the first team reps when we first got out there on day one. Tomorrow we'll get another chance to see this group in a full practice, and I'll be curious if that's kind of the same ratio if we get that starting offensive line in a very similar kind of rep count. But there are a couple guys that are going to be pushing as well. Carius Kearns, a true freshman that they really, really love. You could see him at left tackle. They obviously have guys like Cohen Echols and Paul Mubanga on the interior. They got some sparse playing time last year in more reserve roles, but they're a year older in the program. Bo Bordelon is a veteran who's been around for 3 years now. He could certainly find himself in the mix at right tackle. So there's a lot of guys that I think LSU's going to be rotating in and out, but that core five there is one that I think is I'm penciling in as maybe the group that ends up starting game one against Clemson.
You know, shifting over to the defense a little bit, I look at this team and I look at all the positions, and I can't help but look at linebacker and think, like, you talk about embarrassment of riches on the wide receiver group. Like, when you have, like, basically the entire Weeks family in there, I feel like you're doing pretty good, because those are the type of players that you just want to watch and root for. But then you bring Harold Perkins back, a guy that, you know, it's almost forgotten how elite he is when he's out there. I think he's going to be playing more outside linebacker this year, and I think that's a good thing for him, because I think that's what he profiles at the NFL level. What is, to me, I look at that group and I say this might be the best linebacker group in the nation. Like, would you agree with that? And what are your expectations for that group?
Well, I certainly think they have one of the more talented linebacker individuals in Whit Weeks. Like, I could certainly see a scenario where Whit is, you know, an all SEC, all American caliber kind of talent. And when you've got that guy anchoring the middle of your defense, and just the leadership steps that he's taken this offseason have really been raved about, when he hasn't been able to be on the field as much as he's been rehabbing from that broken bone in his leg that he suffered against Baylor. So he's somebody that I have very high expectations for as kind of the leader of this defense and to really anchor things. And when you've got that, you're able to fill in with some really nice pieces, whether it's his brother, Wes Weeks. He's been getting some first-team looks. Devon Keyes is a second-year player who got a lot of looks towards the end of last season as well. I would expect him to rotate in with Wes Weeks at the other inside linebacker spot and kind of have that trio be the core guys at those two spots. And then you mentioned Harold Perkins there. They've moved him, you know, off ball to the star position is what they're calling it, kind of a hybrid between safety and linebacker, where he's going to play on the line of scrimmage, but be able to pin his ears back and rush the passer from the outside, and then also drop in coverage every once in a while as well. So I think they found a healthy balance with him. We just have to see him on the field. I mean, he's another guy that's come back from a major injury from last year, looks to be moving excellently in that first two practices we've been able to see, really no limitations. He's got no braces on or anything on his knee. He's moving really well. And I think he's the biggest X factor on this team. If he's able to finally, kind of live up to those expectations that, you know, many people had for him after his true freshman year, that really just takes his defense to another level from a playmaking ability. And that's something that Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator, really wants to lean into this year, is aggressive nature and being able to make some more plays on the defensive side of the ball.
Glenn, I wanted to hop in here and ask you a couple questions about LSU's secondary, and I'll start with the safety room specifically, because when we were speaking with Wilson Alexander the other day about it, he said that Jordan Gilbert and DeMarcus Cooley were the starting safeties. Just, you know, day one of practice, we'll see how things kind of change. AJ Holsey and how he kind of fits into that safety room as a free safety, the transfer from Houston. Cooley, as I had mentioned, was the transfer from NC State. Both very high-profile guys. And, you know, I know that Jordan Gilbert's been in the program. Blake Baker's got a couple different chess pieces to move there. But it feels like once you get to that Clemson game, it's likely that it's going to be Cooley and Holsey as your starting safeties.
I would agree with that. I think it's just a matter of time in fall camp before Halsey really kind of takes over one of those safety spots. You know, he's a guy that enrolled in the summer, so there's could be a little bit of just learning the system and getting his feet wet without throwing him out there with the first team on the first week of camp kind of thing going on. But they brought him in. He was a top 10 guy last year in the country in interceptions. I think he had 5 at Houston last season. And so he's got that playmaking ability as well in the back half of the defense, and I think you'll see him. You know, Cooley's another name that I think could play in the deep part of the field, but also potentially be a nickel for LSU on packages where they want to move him up closer to the line of scrimmage. You still got Deshaun Spears, who's a really nice piece, second-year player. Javian Toviano is a third-year player who's finally found a position back there at safety that he's stuck with for an entire offseason. This is a group that I think you look at right now, and there's a lot open. Like, I know there's only a 4 or 5 names there, but there's only 2 spots that those guys can play. And so I think that you're going to see a lot of rotating in and out with those 4 guys plus Jordan Gilbert. And I think that this is a far from settled group right now. But if you had to ask me after, you know, 1 day or 2 days of practice, I would still say that I think it's going to be Cooley and probably Halsey that are going to be your 2 starters against Clemson.
Fun competition for Sherman. And I also wanted to ask you about the cornerback spot because, you know, and we'll see how it progresses over the next few weeks. But man, that freshman and DJ Pickett, I know we've talked to you about him. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field once you get to the actual regular season. But not just him, Monsieur Delane, and how Blake Baker decides to use him in that cornerback spot, the transfer from Virginia Tech. I just want to get your kind of projection. I know it's very, very early in camp, Glenn, but your projection for what the cornerback room is going to look like for week one.
Yeah, I think Delane is pretty much already locked up one of those spots. You know, he was on the first team. He was getting first team reps back in the spring, and we came back this fall, and he was, you know, out there running with the first team again there in the first practice. So I would imagine Monsieur Delane is going to be one of your corners to start the year against Clemson. It's really that other spot that I think is up for grabs, and you've got, you know, Ashton Stamps is a veteran who has a lot of experience now under his belt. He's gone through some growing pains, no doubt. But sometimes if you're the right kind of player and you work the right kind of way, those experiences and those hardships can really kind of mold you into a better player for the next season. And I'll give him credit. He hasn't given up that first team spot yet. Like, they have not really gone to a whole lot of other players at that other cornerback spot. So I think he's certainly in the mix there. I think you mentioned DJ Pickett. I think for me personally, it's just a matter of when, not if, Pickett's in the lineup at the other corner spot. Whether that happens week one against Clemson or week 5 against Ole Miss, you know, I couldn't tell you right now. But I think the best version of this defense is going to be with DJ Pickett on the field filling some kind of role. So that's just a couple of thoughts there. I think PJ Woodland is another guy that they're going to really try to get some good reps this fall and see how he handles being a first-teamer or a second-teamer rotation kind of a guy. And then Jakeem Jackson's the other one I'd be watching for at cornerback. So you got about 5 or 6 options there to settle into 2 spots. But I think Monsieur Delane is probably the one I feel most comfortable with saying is going to be the opening day starter against Clemson.
Glenn, looking at the main guy running the offense, Garrett Nussmeier, 5th-year senior, expected to have a monster season, that big breakout. I don't know breakout year, but definitely expected to take that next leap going into this season. Just early impressions of him so far. I think it was day one, at least, he had a heck of a day.
Yeah, he looked fantastic on day one, and, you know, obviously the receivers had a big part in that as well. But the 7-on-7 drill that they did outside, he went a perfect 7-for-7, hit all of his receivers in the right spots. They did an indoor drill where it's kind of 11-on-11, but it was kind of a walkthrough simulation with the defense. And he hit a beautiful go route to Barry and Brown down the field for about a 35-yard touchdown. Just hit him right in stride, a perfect pass. He looked really, 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 really good in that first day of practice. And so we got to wait and see what happens when the pads come on. And certainly I think a big part of his season is just going to be about that maturation from, you know, the turnover perspective, using his legs a little bit more. I think he's got a lot of massive potential this year to be one of the best players in the country and obviously a Heisman front runner.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of just – these interviews end up just going down the line, so I don't want to leave anybody out, right? And Caden Durham is a guy, you know, going into his 2nd year. Yeah, I feel like he kind of caught some people by surprise last year. Does he have the ability to be that bell cow in this offense?
I think so. The big thing with him last year was he really got going in that South Carolina game and looked like the big difference maker that they needed at that running back spot. And then he broke a couple toes in the very next game at home. And so that kind of, you know, he was able to play through it, but he just didn't have the same kind of impact that I think you're going to see this year if he's able to stay healthy. And look, he's going to be a guy that gets 14, 15 touches a game, in my opinion. I think he's very explosive. He's going to be your featured back. I think you're going to complement him with guys like Caleb Jackson and Harlan Berry, the five-star freshman from down there and at St. Martin's. But Caden Durham's going to be the guy, I think, for this LSU run game. And look, the other part of Nussmeier being a more effective quarterback is they have to have a more efficient run game this year. And I don't think that's any surprise, you know, to LSU fans who watched last year. They really relied heavily on Nussmeier's arm. And if they're able to complement it with a little bit more consistency in the run game, I think LSU is going to really reap the rewards of that on offense.
Glenn, you got anything you're working on right now we can expect on go247.com soon?
Yeah, just lots of recruiting updates. You know, this is going to be a big month of August. LSU's got a couple guys that they really feel like they're going to finish strong with here over the next couple weeks. And then just, you know, practice reports, you know, features. You know, we get to talk to players tomorrow, so we'll have some in-depth looks at some individual players. So lots to come here as, you know, LSU kind of really gets involved with their fall camp and leading up to that August 30th opener against Clemson.
Always awesome info. Appreciate your time, Glenn. Have a good one, man, and enjoy practice tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Glenn West, senior writer, go247.com, joining us there. Check out all his work. Really great stuff from Glenn. Appreciate the update. You know, you get so inundated with Saints practice, it's a little hard to keep up with the other team up the road.
Yeah, Kellen Moore did make sure to be like, I got to shout out LSU and Tulane. You know, they got going today. And it's, yeah, it's going on, you know. And that's going to be on us fast. Like August 31st, yeah. I think, is the game. Like, that's going to be here before you know it. We're in
August 1st, baby.
We are in that month right now. So it's coming.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can sign off on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Let us know what you're up to this Friday, 504-260-1870. Taking a break. Be back with more right after this on WWL. We know you can't always listen to an entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want and how you want. Listen to this show and all our WWL time-shifted podcasts on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Back here on Sports Talk, heading to the top of the hour news break soon. We just talked to Glenn West, writer for Go247.com, about the LSU football team. And yeah, we're in August now, so just 29 days away for the season opener.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that Brian Kelly made sure to talk about, and I agree with him, is like they're focused on coming out of the gates hot, being ready for that week zero game. I think they call it week zero in college football. It's not week one. It is week one. Did they change that?
There is a week zero, but LSU's game versus Clemson is week one.
Okay, so I stand corrected.
Week zero is actually Nichols' game versus Incarnate Word.
Okay, well, thank you, Charlie, for clearing that up for week one. Because, like, I cannot stand another LSU season that starts 0-1. I'm tired of it. Every Brian Kelly season has started 0-1.
Big difference. Tigers aren't favored in this one.
Which Tigers?
The LSU Tigers.
Yeah, genuine question.
The Bayou Bengals not favored in this matchup. Clemson is at home, obviously.
Yeah, and they're at home. But, like, you just, man, if you can get out to a 1-0 start and you beat a premier program in the process, like, that just, it's just, it jumpstarts your season. A loss and suddenly you're climbing uphill the entire way. Just go out there and win that game. Like, it's an important game. And so I'm glad they're putting the emphasis on it this year.
Next hour, we're going to hear from Saints offensive line coach Brendan Nugent, who Jeff got to talk to at Saints practice. Plus, more audio from tight end Jack Stahl, running back Devin Neal, linebacker Pete Werner, and a whole lot more. So stay tuned on Sports Talk right after this on WWL Saints Radio.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.